Hi, today is December 6, 2020. I'm Todd Ogasawart, my good friend John Westfall, and today, I already said what today is. Anyway, Mobile News Podcast 342, a little bit punchy. 2020 does that to you.
Oh, yeah. This year has done a lot of things to people
yep.
that they probably wish 2020 would just leave them alone.
Yeah, well, we've got, 3 weeks left of it? A little bit more, I guess. Too much more. Any one more day is too much more of 2020. So
yes,
yep. All right. So getting on to things. So a couple of M1 Mac type things. So first one is I'm still recording on an Intel based MacBook Pro running Catalina because I'm still afraid to update it to Big Sur because. I've always had audio problems, basically. Everything else seems to work when I upgrade in general, except for audio. Not only are the audio folks getting things ready, in particular for me, it's Rogue Amoeba, which is what I use to do the audio leveling and then also the recording. I use Audio Hijack to record these podcasts with John that we do over Skype. So I guess I'll go. It's in public beta, so I think I'll wait one more beta release or maybe a release candidate, and then I'll try it on an M1. But for now, I'm still using an older Intel-based MacBook Pro. And even though the betas are out, I think it's actually pretty almost production-ready on Intel-based Big Sur boxes, but... my guess is Audacity, which is what I use to do the actual editing, is probably behind. In fact, I think Audacity never regained the ability to record on a Mac. Record from a microphone on a Mac. So I can't, do audio, microphone checks on a Mac using Audacity for audio quality. Or maybe I did it wrong, but in any case. The other thing I noticed is that the Mac Store, the Mac App Store, no longer features M1 apps. There used to be a little section for the first week or so saying, hey, these apps are optimized for M1 and blah, blah, blah. And, that was pretty cool. But it's not there anymore. So let me go up and look. Nope. Best apps and games of 2020. Updated for Big Sur. Explore Microsoft 365. Safari extensions. Nope. Apple Arcade. I do not see anything that says, optimize for M1 anymore, which I find very interesting. I should note that as I stay on Catalina on the MacBook Pro, I still can't update GarageBand, but I was able to update Keynote. So only GarageBand requires Big Sur. The latest Keynote update I got was able to update on Catalina. That's the other thing. So, you remember a couple of weeks ago, I bought a MIDI controller keyboard, a wireless MIDI controller keyboard. And I thought, and I couldn't install GarageBand or update GarageBand on my MacBook Pro running Catalina. So I said, let's try to see how it looks on the M1 MacBook Air. And so, GarageBand, I think, comes pre-installed, but it didn't have any of the sound modules. So I said, I'll go download a couple of sound modules that I use on the iPad. Maybe I'm doing it wrong, but there is only one option to download sound modules. This is one 15 gigabyte sound pack. And since my Air only has 256 gigs of storage, some of which is already used, let's pause this installation. Let me think about it. It's not like I'm going to use GarageBand every day. I'm not a musician in the sense of, something I do every day. So I'm still thinking about that. And I should say I would sacrifice my MacBook Pro, which also only has 256 gigs of storage, but I can't install it. or update it. So there you go. Okay, next up. As I mentioned when I opened the App Store, so Apple announced its App Store Best of 2020 winners across, macOS, iPad, iPhone, Apple TV. Any of those catch your eye, John? Any of those you use, first of all, on a
well, and it's like? It's interesting. So we can just kind of look at the list of the bests across everything. The first, iPhone app of the year, Wakeout.
Yeah.
Wakeout, I think, is interesting because it looks exactly like what Apple is trying to steal with Apple Fitness Plus. You know, and this is exactly Apple's MO. If you know, the worst thing that you can do is build something that Apple likes. Because yeah. if they like it, it's now going to become theirs very quickly.
Well,
and so, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, and you know, the thing I found interesting about it is, aside from the fact that it's a timely app, so it's sort of a what they call a gentle exercise app, which is, you know, what people need during this pandemic, but it's written by a single person. I mean, one individual person is responsible for the app. It's not a big company behind it. So I wonder if they're going to acqui-hire him, or I think it's a him, Andres, A-N-D-R-E-S, Canella. I wonder if they're going to hire this person.
Yeah, I mean, that would also be something that Apple's done. Of course, if they liked this one, they probably would have already, you know, it already would be a part of Apple.
Yeah.
And so since they did not already hire this person, you know, for all we know, this person was contacted about a year ago and was told, hey, would you like to sell to us? And when the person said, no, I think I will stay with what I got, they said, well, okay, you know, your funeral.
But we'll give you an App of the Year award.
Yeah, yeah. But... That what, you know, struck me as very interesting because, of course, that is Apple's MO. Grab something and don't let it go. So I thought that was interesting. But, no, I've not used that one because I'm just now getting into this whole fitness thing. So earlier this year was not part of it. iPad App of the Year, Zoom.
Yeah.
So I'm not exactly happy with this because I'm not exactly, you know, Zoom for me is work. but I guess there are some people that enjoy Zoom to meet with others. I've had people ask me if I think they should get a Zoom account. And I've told them no, not unless you're running, you know, meetings of some sort that you feel like you need it. But I don't know. What do you think about Zoom being a... app of the year?
Well, you know, I to be honest, I was really surprised. I mean, I wonder if it's more of a, you know, how Time Magazine's Person of the Year is the person who has had the most impact on the events of the year versus the best person.
Yeah.
You know, like if you are a horrendous villain, they might make you Person of the Year because you've done so much evil, you know, or something. But if you've done good, you can also... So Zoom to me is like... You know, Zoom is the pandemic success story of 2020, right? I mean, people were using it before it, but it became like crazy popular because of the pandemic, because of its ease of use and so forth. So I guess from that point of view, sure, I get it. Do I know people use it? Yep, absolutely. I don't use it regularly myself, but my wife, for example, uses it for all the classes she used to go to in person. Exercise class and taiko, which is Japanese drumming, which is another interesting story. But at any rate, she's been doing it over Zoom, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's been really interesting. I don't know what I would have voted for in place of Zoom for iPad App of the Year. I don't know.
I think it is just what it is. Yep. You know, I would have preferred not having to have Zoom become so popular this year.
Yeah.
So I guess that's what I, you know, in a perfect world, the iPad App of the Year would have been something different because we wouldn't have needed Zoom so badly this year.
Well, you know, and the other story that, you know, we won't go into because it'd be like a podcast all by itself is the failure of Skype during the pandemic, right? Skype should have, which is what we're using right now because that's what we've been using for years. And I know how to record audio off it and that sort of thing. But Skype should have been the big deal, but Microsoft just blew it.
Well, yeah, because Microsoft still can't figure out what they want to do with Skype. Mm-hmm. You know, they're starting to become like Google, where they just build as many different communicator platforms as possible and see which one sticks.
Right.
And they just need to – Skype needs some love. Because it has not had love in a long, long time.
Well, you know, the other thing is, and something we should try is, of course, you know, Microsoft. just as we said bad things about Skype. It okay. dropped us. So,
did you know that the hotkey to yeah. hang up a call in Skype
yeah.
is the same hotkey as in Finder to go to your home directory on Mac OS?
No, I did not know that. Oh, I thought Skype dropped us.
I just found that out. No, Skype.
Skype was okay.
This was me trying to use a shortcut key in Finder and going to disconnect.
I'll try to edit out some of that, but leave in the funny parts. But I thought Skype yeah. dropped us because we were saying bad things about it.
I mean, Skype probably should. I mean, we're not saying kind things about it. But
what I was going to say was, and part of the reason Skype's not getting much attention is because Microsoft is focusing all of its collaboration development on Microsoft Teams, which has been a huge hit. At least in enterprise, not so much personal, because the personal version wasn't available till recently. But what I was going to say is, you know, we should actually give Microsoft Teams voice video calling a try. I do it every day at work, but I haven't done it. I haven't used it, I should say, for personal voice and video calls. So we should give that a try.
Mm-hmm. Skype, you could have been iPad app of the year, yeah. but instead it went to Zoom.
Yep. And in fact, you know, Skype for Business, which used to be called Microsoft Link, which is a totally separate platform from the Skype we're using, it's going to disappear in July of next year, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So there will only be Skype Personal left. All right, Mac app of the year. That surprised me, because isn't this an old app? Or is it new
yeah,
to Mac?
Fantastical's been around for a long time. This year, though, they did something that, depending on how you feel about it, in Apple's mind, they did something awesome. In okay. everyone else's mind, they did something villainous, which is they went to a subscription model.
Ah.
And Apple has been pushing many of its developers to go to a subscription model, because obviously that makes more money in theory for the developer and in practicality for Apple.
Yep.
So a lot of developers have said that Apple has approached them and said, hey, you've got a really popular app. Why don't you go to a subscription model? And some developers even said it's more along the lines of, sure would be a shame if you didn't have as much popularity in the App Store if you didn't go to a subscription model. So, yeah, Fantastical went to a subscription model. I had bought Fantastical prior to that, and so some of the features remain unlocked for me. But I still don't. The only app that I pay for a subscription that I think is worth it is Drafts, which is mm-hmm. the software I've used now for two books that I've written this year.
Yeah.
Because I've really fallen in love with Markdown in it. But I kind of tuned out to Fantastical because they went to a subscription model this year. But apparently I was in the minority. Others, it did not affect.
Well, at least Apple liked it. Now,
Apple was a big fan.
I'm looking at the are there two? Is there Fantastical one or two? I'm only finding one.
There was originally a Fantastical one and two, and now I think there's just Fantastical.
So the Fantastical for iOS appears to be a one-time purchase. Is that right? At least I'm not seeing like an in-app purchased or.
Yeah.
I don't use it anymore.
There might be different versions. If you have one of the older versions, you might not have the version that has the in-app purchasing.
Oh, okay. Yeah, maybe I bought it so long ago. Oh, yeah, here, in-app purchases, yes, I see it. Oh, yes, and so Fantastical for iOS also has a subscription model now.
Yes.
Maybe yeah. why I don't so use they, it anymore.
Yeah, I went to, so for a while I went to BusyCal, which is a competitor that does not have an in-app purchase.
Yeah.
Although the owner of BusyCal has said that Apple has tried to, you know, court them to do the same thing.
Yeah.
But I also just kind of went to using Outlook for my calendaring on my Mac, and that tends to work pretty well as well. But I liked Fantastical for a long time, but after that, not as big a fan.
And its subscription is relatively high. It's $40 a year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're, $10 a year, it's either $40 a year or $5 a month, which is, you know, $60 a year, so... That's pretty expensive for sort of a one-trick pony, if you ask me. And if for some reason the default calendar or Google Calendar or one of the other free ones don't really do it for you, but okay, fair enough. Thanks for explaining that. All right, mm-hmm. Next one, Apple TV app of the year. I in my show notes to John, I said This one seems kind of gratuitous to me. It's Disney Plus. Now, I like Disney Plus. I don't have an Apple TV, so I haven't used the Apple TV app. But I've used it. I do use it on my iPad, and it's a nice app. I don't think it's at least an iPad. It's, you know, it's not great. It's okay. None of the streaming apps are really great. You know, some are just okay. But the thing to me is, so Steve Jobs, you know, the co-founder of Apple, or his estate, I should say, the Jobs estate is a large minority stakeholder, like multiple digit percentage of Disney ABC. So I thought that was kind of like, well, you know, give one of our own a prize. I don't know. You have an Apple TV, don't you? Or have you used this?
Yeah, I do, and I have Disney Plus, and it is one of the more used apps that I use on there. I do think it strikes a nice chord in streaming apps.
Yeah.
You know, Netflix has been getting progressively more annoying in their streaming app. You know, with auto playing previews, and
that's true.
Just it's like I don't want to watch a little bit of the show while I'm scrolling past
right.
You know, my endless Netflix scroll.
Right.
Hulu is just kind of a bland app, although Hulu had some weird UI issues years ago. I think they've mostly fixed those now. But now,
and it still has commercials.
I do play. Yeah, that's true. Because I've never paid for the upgrade to Hulu.
Oh, I have, and
which
I still get commercials.
To me. Oh, well, that's infuriating.
Yeah.
I mean, I pay the $5.99 a month Hulu.
Yeah.
But there is a commercial-free tier. If you're on that, you should not be seeing commercials.
Yeah, I think I paid for it like a second tier. I think there's a third tier that gets rid of everything, but I wasn't willing to quite go there.
Disney cannot merge Hulu, ESPN, and Disney Plus quick enough for me, which I think the writing on the wall is that at some point they're already bundling all three of those services together.
Yeah.
I'm just waiting for, you know, there to be Disney Plus Plus or something like that. Or, you know, maybe they'll copy Apple, and instead of Apple One, they'll have Disney One, you know, and you'll just get all the Disney content through that.
Well, you know, what I wonder, though, is if they merge Hulu into Disney Plus Plus, let's call it, to be object oriented, or I guess not object, it's C head plus plus. But at any rate, if they merge, I wonder if they're going to bring commercials into Disney Plus Plus.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. They better not. I would be very angry about that in Disney Plus land.
Me too.
But I will say I do like the UI of Disney Plus. I can typically find what I'm looking for. I think they have a nice way of trying to introduce content, and they do have the extras tab, which is nice to see things that used to be DVD extras on certain releases. So,
yeah, the thing about Disney Plus, the UI was terrible in the beginning. It didn't even like let you see what you recently watched things to go back to it as I am wont to do, especially series, right? You're not going to binge watch 8 seasons of something. So it's nice to see that, you know, they added that shortly afterwards. It's gotten a lot better, I guess. I would say the one thing that's disappointing but understandable is, you know, because of the pandemic, a lot of the original content they had scheduled to come out on Disney Plus hasn't come out yet, like WandaVision and I think Falcon and Winter Soldier and a few others. But understandable. I can understand the delay. All right. Okay. Apple Watch app of the year. This one is surprising because I haven't heard a lot of things about Apple Watch apps. I have an Apple Watch like you, but I really don't install apps on it.
Well, yeah, the apps on Apple Watch are so unremarkably bland. they don't really do much. And Endel is an interesting idea for an app for, you know, these sound and visual patterns that are supposed to help you focus and things like that. I don't know what exactly it's doing, if it's doing anything. But, it's hard to build a good watch app. A couple of weeks ago, I downloaded a watch app that I paid for because I did think it was a unique idea. And sometimes when I see a developer doing something on Apple Watch where I go, well, that is kind of cool, I will buy it just to try it with. It's called Coloring Watch.
Coloring Watch.
And so Coloring Watch. It is a series of what you would think of as adult coloring type of drawings.
Okay.
So not of adult things, but, you know.
Not adult content, but
books, the thing, yeah.
Yeah.
But you actually use your watch to do the coloring. And so you, every tap moves you to a different element in the painting or picture, and then the crown lets you select your color. And so I'm showing Todd here.
Yep, I see
the app on your phone will show you all of the options.
Right.
But then you can choose, you know, and so this picture of this sailboat that I'm showing Todd, I kind of chose that on my watch. It took about 5 minutes to do. And it is relaxing. I mean, it's a fun app. I think I paid $2 or $4 or something like that for that. But it's really hard to come up with something on an Apple Watch that is not just a glorified remote control for something on the iPhone and not just a little, you know, tap and be done. You know, I think a good example of it is the Apple Watch app for IFTTT just lets you run shortcuts.
Okay.
Which, that's useful. I just programmed an IFTTT shortcut that will play Christmas music throughout my house through my Sonos speakers. So it is kind of nice that I can tap that on my Apple Watch and within 20 seconds the music's playing.
Hmm.
But it's not exciting. It's not something that no one would say, I got to go out and buy an Apple Watch for that. So I get where Apple's got an issue with watch marketing, trying to get people to really like third-party apps when in reality, I think 99% of the reason people buy an Apple Watch is the stuff Apple preloads onto it. The fitness stuff, the connectivity stuff, all of that.
Yeah, the problem with Apple, one of the reasons I don't install Apple Watch apps, aside from the fact I really don't have any I really see I want, is that I was playing with a bunch of apps on my Series 3 before I upgraded to Series 6, and one of the side effects was I ran out of space to upgrade my watch. So I had to do a factory reset, and just uninstalling it didn't seem to help. Uninstalling the apps, I mean. So I had to do a factory reset to get an upgrade going on that thing, which is kind of annoying. And fortunately, I already had my 6, but you know, I needed to give my watch to my daughter while she was waiting for her Fitbit to be sent back from repair. So that actually worked out for me. Okay, let's see. The next one I found interesting. I'm not a big gamer, so. It's Genshin Impact is iPhone Game of the Year. And I just went to the website to go find out what it's about. Kind of anime looking characters. And it says it's an open world and it's kind of like an adventure thing, right? Different characters, I guess, have different abilities, but they're like weird abilities, like singing. It's not like battle abilities. I'm not really sure what this is about. Maybe a card game? Its website doesn't really explain much. Go to the official website. Okay, so I'm going
I was looking at the games, and I have not played. I've played one game on this whole list, so I'm going to be very useful in our conversation.
Yeah. If it's not expensive, I might look at it. But Genshin Impact, that's about all we can say about it. It's the game of the year for iPhone. Okay, iPad game of the year, I have not heard. I've heard of Riot Games, the publisher. It's called Legends of Runeterra. Looks like another. What do you think? Looks like a card game?
It looks like a card game. Kind of along the lines of like The Gathering.
Yeah.
That's what it appears to be in the screenshot.
So, you know, I guess John hasn't played it. I don't even know the genre well at all, so not much to say about it. Mac Game of the Year. I don't have any games on my Mac. It's Disco. How do you pronounce that word? Elysium. Well, that sounds familiar. I think there's a movie like that. John, I got nothing on this one.
No, I don't know. Looks apparently, like you look at two people hanging out from the ceiling. We'll say that the whole game where you just are at the ceiling of a disco and look down at the people who are in it. I don't know what else would say about it.
Yep, we're just not much of a gamer. Okay, I don't have an Apple TV, so Apple TV Game of the Year is even less. Dandara Trials of Fear looks like kind of a side scroller of some sort. Maybe a tower defense side scroller. Not sure. It looks actually kind of interesting. Okay. Is this the one you've tried, John? The Apple Arcade game of the year?
Yes, I have played Sneaky Sasquatch. Have you played Sneaky Sasquatch?
I downloaded it and I started it up and that's about it. So tell me, what would you. So I have no real opinion of the fact that I just downloaded it and took a look at it.
I played it for about, I guess, a half hour to an hour few months ago. And I thought it was an interesting gameplay mechanic. It's kind of a fun idea. It definitely is cute in its own little way. And it's a problem-solving, map-based game. You know, you got to figure out what the Sasquatch has to do and where he has to go. And he has to hide. That's why it's Sneaky Sasquatch. And he eats food out of the garbage. Because that's, you know, no one gives Sasquatch food on his own.
Yeah,
I think it's a fine game for passing the time. But like many Apple Arcade games, you know, it's kind of the same thing on every platform. So that's why it's just the Apple Arcade game of the year. I actually think the game that's better than Sneaky Sasquatch would have been Mini Motorways.
Oh,
Mini Motorways, I think, is a much more engaging game. But it's not as – it's a much more cognitively important game versus Sneaky Sasquatch. So I guess if you like to think, you're probably on Mini Motorways. And if you just like being Sasquatch, you can be on Sneaky Sasquatch.
Yeah. And the nice thing about Sneaky Sasquatch is there's not – it's not violent, you know, if you're not into that sort of thing. So it's not Call of Duty or anything like that. It's sort of very nonviolent
Call
from what
Sasquatch.
I could see. Yeah. The I installed, what is it, Mini Motorways or whatever? Motor Mini Ways.
Yeah.
I installed it, have not tried it. I'm still playing Tint, which I really like. I would have voted for that for Game of the Year, if you like puzzle-type games. But anyway, yeah, I'll give Sneaky Sasquatch another look now that I've downloaded it. Well, mostly because John convinced me to go to Apple once, and now I have Apple Arcade. And
yeah, I'm a bad.
You're a bad influence, yeah. Terrible, terrible person. I also bought the, where did I put it? I got my cable card that you recommended. So that
came in.
That came in.
That just saves space in my bag because then I have everything I need right there to connect anything else.
Yeah, I gotta go put this in my my work bag since I still do go into the office. All right, and so finally, Apple really talks about trends. As we said earlier, it's kind of been a looking back at a lot of these apps, the Exercise and Zoom and so forth. It's really been kind of a pandemic response collection, in my opinion. And you know, games are good for any time of the year, of course. But when you're not out and about and you need something to do, games are a good way to do something without going out a lot. But anyway, Apple says the trend of the year is. They say 20 developers overwhelming led a trend towards helpfulness, which I found interesting way to describe it. And so they talk about a whiteboard app and some interactive games, share the meal app to make a difference with others. It's the United Nations World Food Program. And the other thing I found interesting is they now have a physical award that they give to people who win an app of the year. And it looks to me like a Mac Mini, a blue Mac Mini. but anyway, so that's our rundown of Apple's App of the Years. They also have a list of the top apps, period. Zoom is number one, by the way, I noticed, in the free charts. It's interesting. So, again, this whole pandemic response thing. So I'm looking at the Apple, top apps of 2020, right, which I assume is most downloaded. And the first, let's see. Zoom, TikTok, Disney+, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, Messenger, Gmail, Cash App, Apple Shopping, Netflix, and it goes on. But basically the top six or seven are all communication apps, with the exception of Disney Plus and YouTube, which are one-way communication apps, right? Or I should say, six out of the top eight or so are two-way comm apps, more or less, Snapchat, Messenger, and two are one-way comm apps, YouTube and Disney Plus. So, people want to stay in touch and watch stuff and buy stuff, because then it's Cash App. Never heard of that one. Cash App, Amazon Shopping, and then all the usuals. Venmo
Cash
isn't
App
there.
Is, like PayPal Venmo? Is Venmo. Venmo is PayPal. That's basically PayPal rebranded themselves as Venmo.
I didn't know that.
And Square, the payment processor that you can get the little Square readers.
Right.
They
right.
own Cash App. So Cash App is their version of Venmo. These companies that target businesses that are trying to target consumers rebranding themselves for consumers. Right. And of course, everyone could just use Apple Pay, which Apple would probably rather you do that because you.
Right. Uh-oh. John just froze, so I don't know if he... He hit the wrong one again. Or if... Or are we having an... No, no, it's me. Poor network connection. Sorry, John, we lost you. Huh. I had a poor network connection message on my end. I don't know why.
Oh, well, I was just saying everyone has their own payment processor these days, it seems.
All right. Let's see. Well, we really talked a lot more about that than I thought, which is good. anyway. Okay. So, actually, another one I want to hear from John is, John, you got your new toy.
I did. So I got my PiBoy DMG case with a Raspberry Pi 4 installed in it. And what's interesting is they've done a number of cool things with this case. So first, I have it on the screen. We're talking, see it. I'll turn it on.
Yep.
And it does use a stated slider switch, just like a Game Boy did. And it has a screen that will start booting up here in a moment, running a custom version of RetroPie so that it's ready to go. They ship a few open source versions of games with it. So you have to provide your own ROMs for everything else. And of course, let's remember that according to Nintendo, there is no legal way to ever get a ROM off of a Nintendo device without breaking copyright and all of that. So even if you own the cartridge, Nintendo is not happy with you. So of course I have not done anything on a podcast.
No.
You know, but you know, you have to bring your own ROMs if you are willing to break the law and do that according to Nintendo. But regardless of that, this is a really neat Raspberry Pi 4 case. So the first thing is that all the buttons do, of course, map the way you would expect them. It has an analog stick as well as a D-pad. It's got a number of buttons. In fact, they even added shoulder buttons on the back. And you can either get them – right now I have kind of the sleek inline versions in there. They also ship you in the kit two raised versions. If you would like those, you can open the case and pop them in. But you can kind of tell the work they've done by taking a stock Raspberry Pi 4 and looking at how the ports map up. You know, obviously that's the top of a Raspberry Pi 4, top of the Pi Boy. But then if you look on the right side or the left side where there should be micro HDMI and all these other things for the Pi 4, you can see that they have moved a lot of it in the Pi Boy.
Yeah.
So,
there are ports in the side.
Yes, they've given you a full HDMI, which the regular Raspberry Pi 4 ships with mini HDMI outputs. Mm-hmm. They have moved the charging to the bottom. They've moved the headphone port to the bottom. They've moved a volume to the bottom. They actually give you a potentiometer for volume, even though it just software updates the volume with a screen overlay.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, the power connection on a Raspberry Pi 4 is USB-C.
Right.
However, they opted for a micro USB input.
Interesting.
Of course, they're not only powering the Pi through this, they are powering the battery. So this thing does come with a 4,500 milliwatt hour battery that does power it and keeps it kind of, they actually put it in the back where the battery door on a Game Boy would be.
So is that like a lithium ion rechargeable or what is that?
Yes.
Okay.
It is a lithium ion.
Wow.
And so they went through a lot of work. In fact, they even went to the effort of when you slide this power switch off to writing a safe shutdown script. So it will automatically power off the Raspberry Pi 4 and won't just kill the power and of course, this is all running off of, since it's a Raspberry Pi 4, it's running off of an SD card. And they do ship it with a 64 gigabyte SD card, which is plenty big for whatever you're going to probably load onto it. And I did go for the 4 gigabyte upgrade in RAM, but... You know, you're not doing anything usually that's too overclocking on these things.
And the color screen looks really good. It's like, what, 2 inches by 2.5 inches or something like that?
Yeah, I can. I'll pull up the stats here in a moment. But they really did do a lot of good work on this device. And so, 4,500 milliamp hour lithium ion battery or lithium polymer battery.
Oh, okay.
And what is the screen? The screen, they are not, they do not have what the size screen is. And of course, they now have these shells in different colors. So if you had a Game Boy that was in a different sized or different color and you would like to have that, you can get that as well. Let me see here. Where is the retro? Let's see. Pi Boy. Gee, you ask a very simple question. And I do not have it.
Anyway, it's a really...
The screen has a resolution of 640 by 480, and it's an LCD, but they do not say what the exact size is. Okay,
so it's a VGA, right?
Yeah.
640 by... Yeah. Or, I had to kind of dip back into memory what a VGA was. Looking at it on the screen, you know, John and I, as I said, are talking over Skype. Looking at it, the colors look really saturated and bright.
Have a brightness control for the screen as well. So if you're in a dark room and you don't want it to blast your eyes with color, you can do that as well.
And as I was telling John before the podcast, I never had a Game Boy myself. But I recall seeing them, and I'm just a little too old. I'm not in the right age category. I'm a lot too old for the Game Boy era. My daughter had some of the Nintendo DS and the one that came before that and those sort of things. But I recall they weren't that bright. They're kind of... Well, the DS was pretty good, but the ones before that, I recall, were kind of a little on the dim side. So it was really nice to see how bright the Pi Boy is and how nicely saturated the colors are. That was really impressive.
Yep, so I've been happy with it. I've been playing a lot of random games I've loaded onto it. I was able to get an old console emulated on there that came out in the late 70s called the Bally Astrocade, which was just kind of one of the consoles I grew up with. And so there's a lot that you can do. And now I'm actually, as we're speaking, I'm taking a SD card image of the micro SD because now that I've got it configured the way I want it, I want to be able to get back to it if I screw it up.
So, yep.
That is the nice thing about using micro SD cards. You can always revert back by taking an image backup and restoring an image backup.
And they're big and cheap now.
Yes, they are. I just bought two new 128 gig for, I think, $15 each on Amazon.
Nice.
From Seagate. So they're getting easier and easier to get, which is good because I have nice cameras that I've bought this year that eventually, when I can travel again, I would like to use to take nice pictures.
You know, speaking of easy to get, one thing I wanted to comment to John about the cable card with two Ks. This thing is hard to open, or at least it was hard to figure out how to open. It's like I'm trying to remember how I opened it now, and I can't get it open. Is there something I'm supposed to press? I forgot.
No, I always pick the wrong side.
Yeah.
I always try to open it from the side that isn't the side to open.
Anyway, I'll have to learn. I'll have to practice opening it so I don't look quite so awkward when I use it. All right, and speaking of gadgets, so as I mentioned, I think last week, the Instant Pot Wi-Fi that I bought I think it was actually before the Black Friday sales, around on Thanksgiving week, arrived. So I finally fired it up and attached it to Wi-Fi, and all IoT devices I ever tried, it requires 2.4 gigahertz. Wi-Fi, so you're not going to use a 5G. But anyway, it works pretty well to connect it to Wi-Fi without any issues. You do it through the app, so you don't, you know, there's no way to type on the Instant Pot itself. So you do it through the app. There's like a default password used to get into it. It has its own access point, by the way, which is how you configure it from the app. So there's probably a little Linux box in my Instant Pot. Maybe all of them have it. I don't know. But anyway, it's really fun. I guess it's fun, you know, because now I don't have to get up and go check how many minutes more it's going to be done. I can just check my app, and I posted recorded a few screenshots. It shows preheating, you know, because it takes a little while to pressure up, and then it says how much time is remaining, and after it's done, it has a time passing label and keep warm. Also shows you what the pressure is, you know, it's high, so forth. The thing I found interesting is that, so this is a 6-quart Wi-Fi, Instant Pot Wi-Fi device. I came to it from the 3-quart, you know, the Instant Pot Mini that I bought several years ago, probably on Prime Day. And I don't know why, but it seems like the 6-quart pressures up really fast, like a couple of minutes, versus the mini, which seems to me to take 5, 6, 7 minutes just to get the pressure and start cooking. So that was kind of a nice surprise. And of course, like I said, I mostly got it because of the Wi-Fi feature, so I can just keep tabs of stuff when I'm, you know, without walking to the kitchen all the time. And as a bonus, it works faster, so I'm pretty happy. And of course, it's bigger, so I can put more stuff in there. So I tested it with some corn on the cob, which came fresh from the field the other day, locally grown. And it was great. 2 minutes, and boom, it was done. So that's on my... It was on my recommended list last week when we talked about relatively inexpensive gift ideas. And it remains on it now that I've actually tried it. You know, connected to my 2.4 gigahertz Wi-Fi network. You know, so don't turn your... If you're going to have IoT devices in your house, you got to keep it on both 5 and 2.4 because there are options to go 5 only or whatever. So if you're going to... Just remember that when you set up for your friends or whatever. The app works pretty well. It's only got like three... I don't think it's got a good high star rating in the App Store, but works well for me, so no complaints. And the price
people bought it thinking it was a replicator and it was just going to materialize food. And they're very disappointed. Maybe that's it.
Maybe. That would be cool, though. That would be cool. Okay, and another disappointing side note, or sidecar, disappointing sidecar note to end the podcast. So last week, you know, I was mentioning, John, I think I had my iPad 5 up, and I said, hey, can't find my iPad, it being sidecar for macOS. And so I tried it again this morning with an iPad Mini 4, which is older, of course, and it also does not see it. It works fine with an iPad Pro. So if you have an iPad Mini, even of a recent vintage, like the Mini 5, which is, I think, the latest, sidecar just doesn't work with it. You need a larger screen, like a iPad Air or whatever. John, what are you using these days? iPad Air?
I use a 11-inch iPad Pro from 2018, the late 2018 version.
Okay. I think my wife has an iPad Air. I should go try hers out because I have Pros also. But, of course, if you really, really want to use your Mac iPad Mini as a second screen, and I do, years ago I bought something called Duet for the iPad, and that it was kind of pricey. It was like $10 or $20. I can't remember which, but it was... You know, more than the average app back then. And I used it a little, never used it much again. Now that I've becoming more of a MacBook user than previously, mostly because of the MacBook Air, the M1 MacBook Air, I'm kind of reinterested in that. So I'm going to go check out if I'm going to go check if it supports the M1 or at least runs in Rosetta 2 mode. I'm going to test it on the MacBook Pro first, which is running Intel, of course, using the older Catalina, not Big Sur, to make sure it just still works, and then I'll go try with Big Sur and M1. Anything else, John, as we hopefully approach the end of, safely approach the end of 2020?
No, other than I will be happy to see 2020 go like everyone else in the world.
Yes.
But, yes. I'm just going to be over here playing on my Pi Boy if anyone needs me, probably for the next month.
Okay, one more question, John, since it doesn't really come with document, the cable card doesn't come with document. What's the little flap on the back for? Just to hold it up?
It's a stand so that if you're propping it, if you're propping your phone against wireless charger.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Very handy. Cable card to case. Alrighty, folks. That's Mobile Views Podcast 342. I guess we can call this the App Store Best of 2020 episode. And
yeah.
Yeah. We will talk to you next time.